Saudi Arabia says it plans to make a major shift in its dealings with the U.S. to protest Washington's inaction over the war in Syria. The Saudi intelligence chief has also voiced Riyadh's concerns over Washington's overtures to Iran. Bandar bin Sultan has criticized Washington for failing to back his country when it deployed forces to crush anti-regime protests in Bahrain. How divided are Washington and Riyadh over Syria, Bahrain and Iran? Can Saudi Arabia successfully pursue its foreign policies without U.S. support? This is The Debate.
Latest reports coming out of a weekend meeting between Saudi intelligence chief Bandar bin Sultan and European diplomats point to a growing dispute between Washington and Riyadh. Bandar bin Sultan has voiced the Saudi regime's growing frustration with the Obama administration and its policies in the region. Bandar has announced that he plans to scale back his country's cooperation with the U.S. to arm and train insurgents fighting in Syria. Reports suggest that Riyadh has also complained to U.S. officials about being cut out of Washington's decision-making on Syria. Many analysts say that's because Saudi officials are frustrated with the White House's latest stance to scrap plans to bomb Syria over an alleged chemical weapon attack in August and to opt for a political solution to the crisis. Prince Bandar has also hinted that what's making his country grow even more irritated by Washington is its recent tentative overtures with Iran. The monarchy also seems to be at odds with the U.S. over its failure to back the Saudi intervention to crush anti-regime protests in Bahrain. Now, some critics believe that Saudi Arabia would never drift away from its major ally, as they both have the same stance over major issues in the region.
We're talking about a historical deal that took place right during the middle of World War II, when Franklin Roosevelt sailed to Saudi Arabia and said to them, basically, we will give you protection if you sell us your oil. And that was the alliance that was created during World War II. If the United States removes its protection from the Saudi monarchy, they will fall within a matter of a very short time.
They also believe that Riyadh and Washington would never break up their ties, as they have much in common. They say Saudi Arabia would be unable to survive without its major ally that so far kept a blind eye on all sorts of rights violations in the country, despite massive international condemnation.
You're watching The Debate. I'd like to introduce our guest to you, former U.S. Ambassador to Syria and Saudi Arabia, Mr. Richard William Murphy, with us live from New York, and political commentator Mr. Mark Dankoff with us from San Antonio. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question to our guest in New York, Mr. Murphy. First of all, what led Riyadh to suddenly speak out about what it's called double standards on Syria and other Middle East hotspots?
Well, the term double standard was used last week when the Saudis stated that they would not take up the seat to which they'd been elected on the Security Council, because the Security Council was permeated with double standards. I think the most basic source of irritation at this point in time, and it's not the first time we've had tensions, is over the warming towards Iran. They are very uncomfortable with any efforts to warm up relations with Iran. They're convinced that Iran is deeply hostile to the kingdom and anxious to do it harm, and harm to other interests that the Saudis have, with particularly with Sunni populations in the region. But Syria is another issue which we have some disagreement about. We've cautioned them to be careful on their arms supply, that it not be going to groups which have close ties to Al-Qaeda, because that is an enemy of Saudi Arabia every bit as much as it is of the United States. And on Bahrain, over the last couple of years, there certainly have been criticisms, carefully phrased by Washington, but criticisms of the handling of the rebellion by Shia Bahrainis against issues they have with the regime there.
Well, of course, we will try and discuss Bahrain, Syria, and Iran in separate questions. But let's first bring in Mr. Mark Dankoff on this as well. Now, Mr. Dankoff, Riyadh seems to be quite serious about what it's calling a shift in policy, but John Kerry has ruled out any serious conflict of interest. How serious do you see the current disagreements that have been voiced by Saudi Arabia?
Well, I think in principle that the United States is fully in league with the Saudis in desiring regime change in Syria. The United States also wants to interrupt Iran's civilian nuclear program. That's clear. But the question is how it's going to be done. The fact of the matter is, when it comes to involving the United States in a surrogate military conflict in Syria and ultimately with Iran, at the behest of both the Saudi Arabians and the Israelis, the American people have indicated in poll after poll they want nothing to do with this. And the fact of the matter is, I think one of the things that has the Saudis especially nervous now is that in the wake of this government shutdown travesty in the United States, and what people see is the danger that all of this poses to the legitimacy of the American dollar, they're presently holding something like $690 billion in foreign assets that are largely denominated in the American dollar. And it seems to me that the American dollar in turn is tied to all kinds of things in the way of war and borrowing that is in the interest of a few people, that is not in the interest of the majority of us, either here in the United States or in the Middle East. And so both the United States and Saudi have a problem on their hands in regard to what they would like to do, but in regard as well to the amount of opposition that they're both facing in the United States as far as the American people are concerned, and also in Central Asia generally as people are looking at this whole situation of supporting a situation in Syria that could result in a wider regional conflict, maybe even World War III. More people find this not to be very palatable.
Well, let's go back on that what you just said there and put it to Mr. Murphy. Now, Mr. Murphy, do you think this is a matter of America looking at the public opinion among Americans, how they are reacting on Iran, on Syria, and seeing that it isn't at all what they are pursuing, which would also be in line with the interests of Saudi Arabia?
Well, when it came to be an issue in late August of using American military force to strike at Syria as a punishment for the regime's use of chemical weapons, I think the reaction from the American public, as in the American Congress, was overwhelmingly negative. So the American administration, the White House, welcomed the overture that they could deal initially, at least, with the chemical weapons program and shifted their attention, their focus to that. And that made us look weak-willed to the Saudis, who had been expecting, apparently, a major American strike against Syria, which personally I don't think was ever in the cards. I think it would have been a limited affair, which would not have shifted the basic military situation on the ground. But the Saudis had certain expectations and they were disappointed. They felt the United States had failed to live up to its word.
Well, Mr. Murphy, some commentators have been telling us that the United States would have launched that military strike, was it not for Russia, that because the balance of power seems to be changing, especially with the involvement of Russia and the amount of support that Syria is getting from its own allies, that this is actually what led the U.S. to step back and not to attack Syria and to consider even moving away from the extremist policies that may have been supported by the likes of Saudi Arabia. Would you agree with that comment?
No, I think it was mostly for domestic reasons. The American public is sick and tired of being engaged, having our country engaged in wars in the Middle East, in the Arab Muslim world. I think that was the appreciation that reached the White House in a wave of negative reactions to the idea of taking an action with unforeseeable consequences about getting into perhaps another conflict in the Middle East.
Mm. And just to stay on the issue of Syria while we're at it, Mr. Dankov, do you think that this division we're hearing of is going to affect the solutions that Geneva II is expected to reach at? I mean, Saudi Arabia seems to be insistent on its military approach toward the conflict. We saw John Kerry today saying that we don't think a military option is viable. So how do you think it's going to affect that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Yes, of course. The question was, how do you think this division between Saudi Arabia and the U.S. is going to affect the Geneva II conference and the solutions that the U.S. is looking for now alongside, of course, Europe and other countries for Syria?
Well, I think this whole situation in Geneva, too, is quite interesting. In the first place, I would respectfully disagree with Ambassador Murphy over who it was that utilized these chemical weapons in Syria. I, in fact, agree with Vladimir Putin and the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov that all the circumstantial evidence points to the people that Saudi Arabia has been utilizing in Syria as being behind this chemical weapons attack, and that it was basically a false flag that was designed to bring the United States and the Europeans and others into Syria militarily on the side of the people that the Saudis have been backing. The fact of the matter is that strategy failed, it didn't work, and what we now have is a circumstance where clearly with what's going on in Geneva, you have the United States and the Saudi Arabians, I think in principle, committed together to the idea that there should be regime change in Syria, but at this point it's an open question as to how they achieve it at this point. And I do think that Vladimir Putin's involvement in this has been very much the wild card in causing the United States to blink, because based on the statements that Mr. Putin has made and his foreign minister have made up to this point, I think an increasing number of people in the United States and around the world began to perceive that the Russians might not just stay out of this one as they have in these last couple of American military interventions in that part of the world. Mm. So that wild card in conjunction with the threat of a wider regional war, I think played a major role in the development of a lot of domestic opposition to these policies in the United States.
All right, Mr. Murphy, do you have anything to say about that?
Well, I don't think you can prove at this point in time whether it was the regime on August 21st or it was a job set up involving one of the rebel groups, possibly with supplies that had come to them from outside. And I've seen a report that it was the Saudis supplying Al-Qaeda. I mean, to me, that's crazy with chemical weapons. But I can't prove it one way or the other. I think the circumstantial evidence is very mixed. The trajectory of the rockets that came from Mount Qasyun against that suburb in the Ghouta, the suburb of Damascus, is certainly a powerful circumstantial evidence to me.
Right. Just to move on now from the situation in Syria and move to Iran and how the policies of Saudi Arabia and the U.S. differ on Iran. Mr. Murphy, we'll start with you. What is at stake, do you think, for Saudi Arabia if Iran and the U.S. decide to improve their relations?
I think the Saudi perception is that this is opening the door to Iranian hegemony over the Arab world, a much stronger Iranian role in the Arab world than they have achieved to date. People have talked of the Shia crescent reaching from Iran across Iraq, using the support of the Syrian regime to reach Hezbollah in Lebanon. And the Saudis are very sensitive to this. They see themselves as perhaps the Sunni Muslim leader, and they welcome no challenge from the Iranians. And not to forget that in the first years after the Iranian Revolution, the speeches being made by Ayatollah Khomeini about other Muslim regimes labeled the Saudis and just about everyone except his own regime as corrupt and blasphemous, et cetera, and should be thrown aside. They don't forget that.
Mark Dankoff, what do you think is at stake for Saudi Arabia? And do you think that the United States is going to consider all that was mentioned there by Mr. Murphy?
Well, I think this is where Saudi policy and Israeli policy coincide completely in regard to their mutual agreement, it seems to me, and mutual desire that there be regime change in Iran. The present situation in Syria is nothing more than a prelude in their thinking to the eventual achievement of a regime change in Tehran. The fact of the matter is that the United States and Israel have not figured out quite how to do this, especially since Iran has continued with what is its right to continue with as a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The other thing is that the American public has figured out that the Iranians would be a far more formidable foe in an armed conflict than has been sold to them by the Israeli lobby in the United States. Here we have a situation, I think, where the question is not as much whether or not the United States and Iran are warming up to one another, as much as it is a situation where at least a few people in Washington and the Obama administration, and I think, frankly, more than a few people in the intelligence community and the military community that aren't talking publicly for obvious reasons, recognize that an open conflict with Iran could bring about a series of unintended consequences upon the United States and upon Israel that make this a policy worth rethinking. This is one time when I think Barack Obama has correctly exercised caution in regard to having Mr. Netanyahu and the Saudis dragging him into something that could potentially have global implications.
Right, before we go to our guest, Mr. Murphy, on that, well, we're just having time to take a look at some of the comments that have been posted on our Facebook page. We'll go and look at them now, and we'll be right back.
Don't be deceived. They are the one and the same. Whatever they say publicly means the complete opposite. Smoke and mirrors. Let's see Saudi remove the US bases from Saudi. Then we might believe the Saudi king. Saudi is a puppet of USA. They can't do anything. Just a cheap talk.
Three comments posted on our Facebook page, I think more than three, four there, and all of them, Mr. Murphy, saying that they don't believe this is serious and that Saudi Arabia and the US could not be actually parting ways. Do you agree with those comments?
I don't look for a breakup of the relationship. We've been through some pretty tense times with the Saudis. The one I'm recalling is when the king, and this would have been about 2000 or early 2001, passed the word to the Bush administration that it looked as if we were going to we were at a parting of the ways on handling the Palestinian issue, and we'll just move in different directions. Now, the quick follow-on of that position, that statement, was 9/11, and the investigation turning up that some nine Saudis working for not for the regime in Saudi Arabia but had been involved, highly embarrassing to the regime, and that helped calm the differences over the Palestinian issue in particular. We didn't pull away from each other on that. So I don't look for a breakup by any means, but it's another period of some tension, stress between Riyadh and Washington.
And before we run out of time, let's quickly bring in the issue of Bahrain as well. Mr. Dankoff, how serious do you think the divide between Saudi Arabia and the U.S. on Bahrain is? I mean, we know that Saudi Arabia has been directly supporting the Al Khalifa regime. It's been deploying troops and armored vehicles. But we haven't seen any kind of action by the U.S. to support the opposition there. We've not seen any kind of condemnation. So do you think they are very different on their approaches on Bahrain?
Well, of course, the United States Naval Fifth Fleet is based in Bahrain. This should not escape anyone's attention. It also underscores the fundamental weakness in American foreign policy in that we state that we are in favor of one person, one vote democracy throughout the world, We seem to favor that in certain parts of the world when it's in our interest, but when it comes to supporting a majority group of people, when that's not in our interest, we're quite happy to support a repressive minority regime. And clearly that's what we're doing in Bahrain, where if you had one person, one vote, that would be the end of the current government in Bahrain. So this is where it is. And when we start getting into this whole business of international power politics and petrodollars and Zionist interests in the Middle East, this is clearly the bottom line of what drives American foreign policy. And in this situation in Bahrain, we're just hoping that the rest of the world doesn't notice our own hypocrisy in this matter.
Mr. Mark Dankoff in San Antonio, political commentator, thank you very much. Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time. I'd also like to thank our guest in New York, Mr. Richard William Murphy, former U.S. ambassador to Syria and Saudi Arabia. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. That is all the time we have for this edition of The Debate. From Miho Maleski, it's goodbye.